How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
What's up? I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we've got a lot of books to talk about this week, so we're going to get into it right now. Kicking it off with a big one, Ultimate Spider-Man, number 11 from Marvel Comics, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by David Mesita. The big deal, at least on the cover, is the introduction of the Ultimate Black Cat. But I'll tell you...
We get a lot of that in here.
Well, that's the funny part, is that seemed like a big deal, and it became a big deal online, but the majority of the issue is not dealing with that, and in fact dealing with some really surprisingly emotional stuff, but also giving us, maybe for the first time in 11 issues, Spider-Man stuff, where he's just quipping and stopping some bank robbers and doing things that only a spider can.
Mary Jane asks if you want a full round. You say yes!
I mean, we learned a lot about this stack is going to be thick with superhero sex, and I can't wait to get into it. And in this one, Spider-Man takes a classic rain check, something we all do in our regular lives, right, everybody?
Well, not to jump ahead, but we are going to be talking about Spider-Man Rain 2 later in the stack. And if we know anything, when Peter Parker fools around with Mary Jane, he kills her. Right,
dude?
Wow. That's
not cool, man.
That's very anecdotal evidence, Alex. I wouldn't hold that too close to reality.
I mean, it's part of the story. It's part of the story in Spider-Man Rain and Rain 2.
In this comic, it is strange that Black Cat is so heavily featured, because we get a moment in here where it's like, remember what you did to Black Cat? And he's like, yeah, I don't know. And I was like, what? I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we see Black Cat a little bit later. And I'm like, I want that story. I love Black Cat. I want to know what the take is here. But in general, this book is good, and it touches the emotional points we want. We get the most Peter Parker, Mary Jane stuff that we've had in a decade.
Years.
Which
I
is
have
nice.
To like this. I'm legally obligated to like this.
I will tell you what. I mean, this is spoilers for this conversation. I thought this was a phenomenally written and staged conversation that they had in the middle of this book between Mary Jane and Peter. The stuff with Mary Jane and Peter about the relationship and being scared about him being Spider-Man was really good. But the thing that I was, maybe not jaw-dropped, but very surprised by, because I don't think I've ever really seen a superhero comic address this, is Mary Jane asking him, how do you feel about fighting people?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's cool.
Right. Yeah, this is, and it was a very realistic reaction you get from him. It's a question that we should be asking all the time about these superheroes so they get powers. I just thought it was very
smart. You punched like 10 people tonight and beat the shit out of them. Are you cool with all that? And especially Peter Parker portrayed as a very sensitive person in every iteration. Like, I thought that was great. And another thing about this universe that is allowing us to examine sort of stated continuity that we never think about very much is the ticking clock. Mm-hmm. Like this here, where this Peter Parker, Mary Jane conversation, they have this conversation a million times in the continuity. And every time it's like Mary Jane's like, I'm worried. And he's like, I think it's going to be fine. And like, it's just an ongoing low level stress for us, the readers, and those characters to be dealing with. The fact that we know it's fine right now, but it's going to get much worse as this clock of the Ultimate Universe is ticking down, is really exciting. It makes the stakes actually live. And not to mention the conversation we have at the end of the book between Peter Parker and Uncle Ben.
Yeah. Yeah. Justin's a sucker for a ticking clock. Like, he loves it. Oh, Spawn.
Man, you ever look at a clock? It's always moving.
Oh, man. We're constantly losing time, man. You know, it's just crazy.
Or finding time.
Ooh.
You ever thought of it that way?
No. Look what I found.
No.
It's time. Oh.
Wow. Anyway, this book is great. The art is great. Why don't we move on since we have a lot of stuff to talk about with the question.
Yeah, we should move on.
All Along the Watchtower, number one from DC Comics, written by Alex Segura, art by Cian Torme. This is front and center of the new All-In continuity, where the question is the security chief on the Justice League's Watchtower. In this issue, we find out how that came to be, and also she's thrust right into the middle of a mystery in terms of what is happening in the Watchtower. Somebody is attacking it. The Justice League doesn't know why, and she's got to find it out. I was really impressed with the amount of different tones and ideas they went through this issue, that it's a setup issue, but you are getting emotional stuff set up at the same time, particularly with Renee Montoya and Batwoman who shows up here.
Yeah.
There's a good mystery. There's action. I was expecting, given Alex's behind this, for it to be more straight up noir on a space station. But no, it's a superhero book, first and foremost. I really enjoyed this.
But I will say, I think the part of Alex Segura's sort of canon I would highlight here is the fact that he's a novelist. Mm-hmm. Like, this feels very novelistic in a way I was super excited about. I love Renee Montoya in this position. I love that character. The way we're sort of looking back at like being rejected from being a cop that had recently happened in Gotham City and embracing the superhero side of her life, having this new job, and touching all these points, setting up the dominoes in a really great way. And the art was fantastic as well. I think to put a pin in this idea of someone who guards the Watchtower and having it be Renee Montoya's question is so good.
Yeah, I also really love this. I thought this was such a great first issue of bringing you into this idea, getting you excited for more. And the question is one of my favorite characters. So, yeah, I'm very excited about all this. This is a great team on this fantastic first issue. You got to check this out. Yeah, this was awesome.
The Rockefellers, number one from Ghost Machine and Image Comics,
Rocket
written by Peter
Fellers.
The old Rockefellers. Well, look who we got here, the Rockefellers.
Written by Peter J. Tomasi, art by Francis Matapul. This is kicking off another universe for Ghost Machine, the Family Odysseys universe. We've been to Hyde Street, the horror universe, Rook Exodus, the Rook Exodus universe, and the Unknown universe, which is the things that Jeff Johns has been doing for a while now with those various characters. So this one is supposed to be like kind of all ages friendly, focusing on family stuff. And here we're kind of getting like, what if the Jetsons, but serious, and they went back to 2024? I think that's
interesting.
Kind of the pitch.
I pinned it on Lost in Space.
Oh, ooh. Yeah, that's probably a better comp.
because I also think Fantastic Four is a good comp. I think all of these are in the air of this book.
Kind of gives me a Swiss Family Robinson vibe a little bit.
There we go. Swiss Family Rockefeller.
Yeah, I was getting a little Flowers in the Attic type thing going on.
Oh, no, definitely
that's
not that.
Nice. What about just any family? Just family? You ever thought this reminds you of a family?
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Let me ask you this. How many other titles are being launched in the Family Odysseys imprint, you think? We have a lot?
There's one they've announced, Hornsby and Halo, I think is the name of it.
Nice. Oh, yeah, we read something of that. But this, for it to be all ages, there's a pretty tragic and very well done emotional moment in this book that I was like, oof, got me.
Not cool spoilers here. But
I thought it was cool.
I didn't think it was cool at all. I mean,
it was ice cold.
It was ice cold. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Don't kill off one of your best characters in the first issue. I mean, come on.
Pete hates it when an older lady goes down.
You can't kill off grandma.
Barely ever happens, too.
She's just getting started.
No, she's actually, grandmas famously are not just getting started. they have 80-year-old recipes.
Don't pigeonhole grandma, dude.
I'm just saying, very few grandmas are just getting started.
I like this. I like the action. Same. Francis Matapul always knows what he's doing there, particularly the stuff in the beginning when they're running away from the future, which we don't know exactly why yet, but we get an inkling by the end of the issue. I thought was well done. The stuff in the present, I want to see them play with a little bit more, and I think we will get that in subsequent issues.
Yes.
Because there's a lot that is happening here in this first issue, and we don't quite settle down with the characters quite yet, but I've read enough Peter J. Tomasi stuff to know he's really good at that. So I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes in the long term.
I love Peter J. Tomasi, and the J stands for Justin Loves. So that's why you know I'm going to be on board with this. A little known fact. This is really, really fun, really like hit those emotional moments and used the sort of looking back references that we named when we first started talking about this in a way that did not feel at all derivative, but felt pretty fresh.
Yeah. You had something to say, Pete?
Yeah, I had something to say besides the fatal flaw of killing off grandma. And then they gave us a really interesting teaser, and again, spoilers. But in the future, everybody pays with things with severed eyeballs. So exciting to see how that all kind of unfolds.
I'm investing heavily in that. That's my crypto.
Smart. You know what I mean? Start saving them now.
I've got my eye on them.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles X Naruto, number one from IDW, written by Caleb Golner, art by Hendry Prasetya. Per the title, this is mixing up the TMNT and Naruto. And I'll tell you what, one of the things that
tell
I was thinking
what.
About, I'm going to tell you something. And I think we talked about this here on the show before, but I think crossovers are obviously a tricky thing to do because if you know both of the properties, we were talking about this with TMNT Masters of the Universe,
right?
And how there's like, you got these check boxes of, oh, you did that thing. You did that thing. That's the things you want to see.
Right.
I don't know anything about Naruto, like zero about Naruto. So
Same. Coming
into this, this was a harder lift for me than usual with this sort of crossover, particularly because it's very leaning towards the Naruto side instead of the TMNT side. Don't think it's bad, but it was just, I spent a lot of time being like, what are these guys? What's going
on?
Wow,
really?
What's happening?
Oh, now, wow. Pete, what did you think then as a Naruto guy?
I was curious to hear what you thought.
Yeah, so at first I was a little bit harumphy like you were, Zelbatron, where I was just kind of like, all right, I like both of these, but it doesn't mix well in my head. I was pleasantly surprised and won over by the end. I thought it was a cool kind of tease at the end. I also, you know, usually Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles aren't so bright and kind of colorful, so it was kind of interesting with the masks and stuff that they had on. So I was pleasantly surprised by this and then won over by it. So I was skeptical, but then very happy by the end. So I felt like they did a fun job of kind of mixing these two things and getting interesting kind of choices being made. Although, for the turtles to put a mask on, I mean, that's a mask on a mask. You know what I mean? You're double masking there, which logically
Batman does that all the time, though.
Okay. I mean, is the, because like the mask, the bandana, I mean,
technically,
that just covers the eyes. Like, is that a full mask?
It's still a mask, dude. I mean, that's what Zoro
doesn't
wears.
Hide your identity. It's like wearing sunglasses.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm beginning to suspect those teenagers might be turtles, but I'm not sure because of the mask. Yeah, I can't quite tell.
It's hard to tell.
I could figure out who they are.
Yeah.
Who won't these guys cross over with, these turtles?
What's your relationship with Naruto, Justin?
Flirtatious?
I mean, they're always big hits at the con, you know? I mean, so many people dress up and it's, you know.
Yeah, I've never gotten into any Naruto.
You've never checked it out? You've never been like, hey, you know, wow,
isn't
I'm
Naruto
on the Cartoon
a ramen
Network.
Brand? I've definitely had that.
Nice. Yeah, I'm sure that's related to this.
Oh, no. It's a ramen restaurant here in New York. It's good. It
I will say, I really like the art in this issue. I thought the turtles especially were drawn with real, like, they were, like, sized. They were bigger and, like, they felt more intimidating to me.
Yeah.
And Pete, as a nunchaku expert, something you talk about almost constantly for some reason, is it nice to just see that?
Yeah, Chuck, what's up? I throw the chucks around.
I've never seen you chuck, and I've known you for so long. You talk about chucking, never seen you chucking.
Oh, I'm chucking, bro.
Can we insert a video here of you just straight chucking?
Yeah. I'd love to.
How much nunchuck could a Pete nunchuck if a Pete could nunchuck chuck?
Well,
if a Pete could nunchuck none.
Ooh, now that's
prove it.
Ooh. Yeah, that's good.
Prove it.
Why don't we move on and talk about Wolverine number 3 from Marvel, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Martin Kukulow. This is the second part of the story of Wolverine teaming up with the teen Wendigo, who just ate like a little bit of human flesh.
It's just a little
just a tiny little bit. I like this all right. I think this is fine. It's more Wendigo stuff. It's Wolverine. You get into the whole gold do metal thing towards the end of the issue. But I do have a spoilery question for you guys. So towards the beginning,
I know what you're going to do. I know exactly what you're talking about because I want to talk about it too.
Wolverine is like, oof, this soldier was cut down by the Wendigo. I've got to save him. You know what I should probably do is I should bleed inside of his body to give him some of my healing factor to help him heal. Wolverine's powers don't work like that.
Well, here's the thing. True. He even talks about it. It wasn't to make him heal. It wasn't to heal his wounds. It was to try to combat the Wendigo infection. Okay. So that he wouldn't become another one.
His infection would fight that
infection.
Do you
think Wolverine's blood cells, do they have like little claws? Like they're going through the bloodstream of that guy and there's like little Wendigo blood cells and they're like,
snicked. Tiny little snicks.
I'm the best there is at what I do.
Oh, wow. I mean, that sounds enjoyable. I'd love to go to the micro level to see that all go down. I think that'd be really fun. But yeah, the answer is no. That was a weird moment in the comic where I, you know, if that guy could have lived or died, it really wouldn't have mattered. Like, we had more story to tell. So it was weird.
You had a different problem than I did.
Yeah, you were like, let that dude die.
I was just like, why do we care about this guy? You know what I mean? Like, it's nice
to stop him.
Tie off his wounds, address his wounds, cool. But then, like, cutting yourself open and being like, you know what? Sometimes bodies need blood, and I'll just throw some blood on
this. It feels to me like it's a idea the writer had, obviously. But, like, it's an idea where they're like, ooh, I've never seen Wolverine's powers lurk like this. Why don't we try that? But I feel like it's another one of those slippery slopes with Wolverine's powers where I always go back to Mark Millar taking a sentinel and stamping on Wolverine until he was a skeleton and then growing back from that. And it's like, that's too much, man. If we now are adding in, he can bleed into people and heal them. Stop. He has too many things already.
Well, that really reared its head in the Deadpool Wolverine movie. I was like, they can't just constantly, they're taking.
Are you talking about the perfect movie that was made? What do you mean?
I think the Academy will recognize it as such.
Yeah, me too.
What I was going to say,
to
answer both your questions, he was saving that soldier not to just save that guy's life. He didn't want to have to fight another Wendigo. Because for whatever reason, Wolverine's always on Wendigo patrol. He crosses the Canadian border, and some fucker's eating human. Duty. And he's like, here we go again.
I actually think it was something different. Sorry to interrupt you, but I think he was doing that because the whole theme of this arc is he still an animal, right? So he's showing, I'm not an animal like the Wendigo, who also is not totally an animal, by helping this soldier, by trying to help his fellow
man. And on the back end of the issue, he's like doing breathing exercises with the Wendigo. I was like, what? Is this how that works? The whole thing was like taking some very standard Wolverine storytelling things and doing different things with them.
It was nice, though, you know, because sometimes you just need that reminder to breathe. You know what I mean? You get all worked up. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Why I read Wolverine comic books.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when I breathe.
Chillax.
But
that's how I
breathe. Do you think, when was the last time you guys were in Canada? Is there just loose human meat around? Why is everybody eating human up there? It's a bunch of cannibals. There were so many. Wendigo is just
when
a Canada
it gets cold,
thing?
Man, you got to make some weird decisions when it gets cold.
I believe they call them Timbits, if I remember correctly. I haven't been back.
Yes. No, I'm into that. I like
Tim
Hortons.
They're bits of a guy named Tim.
I got it.
Damn. Tim Hortons is what he's saying.
Milestone Universe, The Shadow Cabinet, number 1 from DC Comics, written by Joseph P. Illidge, art by Daryl Banks and Atagon Ilhan. This is bringing together a bunch of threads from Milestone titles that have been running over, I believe, the past couple of years. And here we're getting The Shadow Cabinet of the title. The main character, Icon, is battling some shadowy forces, though maybe joining some shadowy forces as well. Ooh. This is another universe that I just do not know enough about, the Milestone universe, but I enjoyed this anyway. I really liked what they did with the main character. She was intriguing. And I think if you haven't been reading, there's a lot going on here. There's a full solid page of recap right at the beginning. But once you get over that and all the talk of like, wait, Brainiac was attacking them and what's going on, you actually get a pretty intriguing story about this main character fighting against forces that are much bigger than her.
Yeah, I agree. This was fun. This was really cool. I also liked how we got to kind of ride with different heroes and, you know, spend some time with them, kind of get to know them and stuff. So that was great. Yeah, I think this was a cool. And I also like the kind of call to action. I felt like it kind of organically happened nicely in the story. But yeah, cool characters, great kind of issue. I thought they dealt with a lot of different stuff in cool ways. So yeah, it was super cool that they did this.
Excuse me. There's so much universe here, and I feel like they're able to touch on it and weave it in a nice way. I definitely want more of this. This feels like the launch of a full line, and it's really just one book, and it's a 4-issue series. So I hope it feels like they're just going to use every panel of this book to really put these characters.
Well, I think they specifically said online that they really need people to buy this book so that they could do exactly the thing you're talking about, which is like blow out the milestone line again. You're saying, they're putting everything on the table here.
Yeah,
so
that's good.
Pick it up. Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted feeling. That includes some great comic book items, ranging from a customizable You Are My Hero glass to a personalized comic book made from family pictures. There's also a DIY mochi donut kit and something called 12 Days of Hot Sauce, but you're probably more into the comic book things, I'm guessing, given, you know, our podcast. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/comicbookclub. That's uncommongoods.com/comicbookclub for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The sun's shining, birds are singing, and all feels right in the world.
Until the season changes, and suddenly you lose your motivation to get out of bed. In fact, 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression no matter the season or time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all, because we want you to live your best life and be your best you all year round.
Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
Barstow, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by David Ian McKendry and Rebecca McKendry, art by Tyler Jenkins. So this is essentially about a woman who is going to the small town of Barstow to investigate some stuff, but there are weird, batshit, insane, disgusting things that are happening pretty much around every corner. Particularly Tyler Jenkins' art here is disturbing in exactly the way you want this kind of title to be disturbing. So I was very impressed by that.
First title I read in the stack, I was like, wow, coming in hard on this. It is, I really enjoyed it, unsettling and horrifying throughout and in surprising ways each moment.
Yeah, this is creepy as shit. Art makes it even creepier. Amazing art, though. But it really kind of adds this kind of extra layer of creepiness, but also kind of tripped out, beautiful kind of moments in this kind of a creepy, insane world. So, yeah, pretty neat.
Ice Cream Man, number 42 from Image Comics, written by W. Maxwell Prince, art by Martin Morazzo. Now, if you are a frequent listener or watcher of the show, you know we love this book, except for the last issue that we were like, yeah, it's okay. This is the first time in 41 issues where it's like, eh, it's okay.
Wait, what?
Yeah, the Bond issue.
I wasn't there for that.
No, you weren't. That was me and Pete talking about it. We were like,
yeah,
this one was all right.
Blew it.
We did. But I think, if anything, they were holding their breath for this issue, which is a provocation of an issue, purposefully looking inside what Ice Cream Man is and its place, not just in the comic book sphere, but also in the world today through the lens of a family moving into a horror house. But there are also break-ins for the real world, not least of which W. Maxwell Prince at a comic convention citing issues of Ice Cream Man in this issue. Ridiculously impressive throughout. I'm skirting around spoilers. I don't know how much we're going to get into it, but
yeah.
I think some really pointed things to say, not just about the world, but how we talk about things in the world and how we react to them, but also why we go towards horror. So a lot of ideas and thoughts going on here.
Also, this is the first issue with a warning label in the front. I mean, mm-hmm. I was like, hey, you should have put this in from the beginning. This
well,
has been
they're dealing with
real
shit. World stuff and showing yeah, you real images.
This issue touches reality in a way that I think they were concerned yeah. would be surprising right. and unsettling.
Yeah, I think they're less concerned about, like, oh no, ice cream spider monsters than school shootings. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Well, yeah, spoilers. But yeah, it's it deals with some real scary next level stuff and also reality of some things for sure. I definitely thought it deserved the warning label. I was just like, you've already scarred me. It's just kind of crazy this late in you throw a warning label on it. But yeah, this was intense on many, many levels. It constantly is impressive how creative this is. It's just, I mean, I have no idea what I'm ever going to read when I open up an Ice Cream Man, and it's horrifying in all the best ways. Yeah, this continues to impress, but also just be extra fucking scary, but also hilarious and disturbing. I mean,
yeah.
the part where the doctor is operating, and spoilers, but I want to get into this one.
The Ice Cream Man.
Yeah. Is operating, and they're literally peeling somebody's face off, which is so gross, but then goes,
you ever
hey,
seen face
we
off?
Should, of course I have, many times, face
there it is.
Off. The goes to the dog who is assisting this operation, dog standing on its hind legs, and says, hey, next time we should remember to get anesthesia. And the dog writes down in his notepad, woof. I just was dying of laughter.
Now, Pete, how did you feel about the fact that they were operating on a grandma?
Did not like that, obviously. Ooh, and it's an auntie, how dare you? But, you know, like, Jesus.
Older age. Auntie, though.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sure. But, yeah, I just, it's disturbing, it's hilarious, it's creative, it's weird, it's magical, it's a lot of things that this comic accomplishes, and it's pretty damn impressive is what it is.
I mean, all of these things are true about this. We're fully in the bag for this great comic book work. But this issue made me curious, and we've talked to W. Maxwell Prince about it, but like how he approaches this. Like, this feels like a emotional response to the world. Like, he's trying to write horror stories, but the real horror that I think a lot he confronts and a lot of us confront every day is the real world and the news that we read and the things that are happening. And so he's like, okay, if that's a truth, how can I make my story about that? A horror story. His book is always horror, but I feel like this was like, I need to talk about the real horror. So he comes in and he starts to inject reality in little places he paces out perfectly, injects reality while following like a classic standard horror trope. And it's just so smartly like moved down the line. Real reality really makes us lean in. Interesting. The horror trope keeps pulling us along because we know what it is. We're ready to be in that story. And then he punches us three times. And I would argue each punch hits. It's hard. That's so hard to do, to have something where the pattern is set and you're doing a similar move three times. I think each one's hit. Each one hits in a really impressive way. I just thought this was a titanic book. You don't have to read anything else. Pick this book up if you want to feel something about life.
Well, and also I'll throw out there, I know, again, we're sort of like jumping around exactly what happens in this book, but this is the sort of story that you could only tell in comic books because the way it works, those punches are because of the page flips. Like, that is very 100%. Specifically how it works. I'm curious to see if they're able to hit it the same way when they move it into trade, if the page, you know, the way the pages are laid out is any different, but that's how it works. Like, this is the kind of experience you can only get in a comic book. Don't miss this issue. Why don't we move on to a little palate cleanser with Venomore? It's Jeff, number one from Marvel, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Guri Hyrou. Now, the first two It's Jeff issues were all collections of the Marvel Unlimited comic, but this is an original story actually set during the events of Venomore. And I was fully expecting... My son actually asked me, because he loves the It's Jeff comics, he was like, oh, do I need to read any of the Venom War stuff before I read it? And I was like, no problem. You don't need to. They're not going to tie it in any way. But nope, it legitimately takes place in the middle of Venom War with Jeff the Land Shark.
Did your son read it and then call you stupid for saying that you were wrong?
He does that anyway. Every day he wakes me up, flicking me on the eyeball, and he's like, hey, stupid.
On the eyeball.
Tell him to save your so eyeball, much. Man. That's how you pay things in the future. You're going to need that eyeball.
Anyway, I thought this was great. Very fun, very funny. Great use of Venom and symbiotes. And as it turns out, you don't actually need to read anything with Venom more, even though it does actually tie into it. Great issue.
But I will say, I love the character choices here outside of just the Jeff, the Jeffness of it. Really fun. And the Guri Hyrou art continues to be excellent.
Yeah, this is just such a fun book and such a cool palate cleanser. You know, we read so many intense, comics. This was just so nice to kind of be like, oh, let's just hang out with Jeff and have some fun. And it's
from intense to untense.
Yeah. And I love the, spoilers, but, he's done being Venom. He's like, I'm just going to roll Venom up like a yoga mat and just get on with my day. Hilarious. Hilarious.
Great stuff. Definitely pick this up. Give this to everybody in your life. Wonder Woman number 15 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Daniel Sempere and Kare Randolph. In the front story, we are following up on the death of Steve Trevor and the birth of Trinity as Wonder Woman tries to put Trinity to bed, baby Trinity. And meanwhile, all of her allies are slowly dismantling the Sovereign's operations piece by piece. And then the backup story, we get to see from the perspective of Steve Trevor in the afterlife how things are not quite perfect for him. A great issue of this book, I thought. Very impressively done.
Yeah, and the kind of tie-in of it, of all these stories, is we get the five little princesses kind of a lullaby that Wonder Woman is kind of singing here. So this was very creative and cool. This is a badass cover that we're looking at here. Yeah, I just thought this is such a great kind of package here. You get solid art. You get some really cool different kind of stories. And, man, it's just impressive as shit, man. I had a blast with this.
Tom King, some people, sort of poo-poo his work. But this is a person just sort of like W. Maxwell Prince with Ice Cream Man who – comes in with like, what is this issue? There's composition here, and there's pattern making. It's almost musical. And this issue does feature like a repeated song, but it's also format wise, it's very like structured. There's like stanzas and beats going through this, and it's just so satisfying. I feel like it just feels like a very constructed comic. I love that. I think the art is excellent in both stories. And I like that they chose to put that backup in this book. Like it, and the way we're moving Trinity from the backups into the front of the book, so the backup has now changed, is really cool.
Moondogs, number one from Image Comics, written by Tananarive Due, art by Kelsey Ramsey. This is part of the Horizon experiment, which is taking genre stories and flipping them on their head by giving them a different, I don't know, what would you say?
Different take?
Take?
Yeah, sure, a different take. I mean, in this case, we're talking about vampires.
Oh, you mean rooted in a different culture?
Culture, perhaps. Yes. That's the word that I was looking for. Thank you. I don't know why I was blanking on that. Here we are getting werewolves down south. And dealing with different cultures there and different werewolves of different descent. There's some awesome werewolf action throughout here, but what did you guys think about this?
Yeah, this was a blast. Also, I really love the kind of letters page in the back that breaks things down a little bit, gives you a little explanation of stuff, which is very cool and kind of really helps you understand the story. Yeah, love the art and the action, and this was such a kind of cool take on stuff. This feels fresh and cool, even though we've seen a lot of different werewolves. It's nice to kind of get this kind of story.
Well, and like what I have really enjoyed about this Horizon Experiment stuff is we get these fully formed ideas and we get one big story in that world and with so much promise going forward if they do choose to make more of any of these. And this one is a great use of that genre. There's a lot of like family stuff here, but it's not just like, hey, this family's werewolves. Like there's a lot of elements that are added to it besides just sense of place taking place down in Miami and Southern Florida. You get like the family, the culture that has sort of made their ability to control their werewolf state a little bit is really interesting. Like, there's just a lot of additive to the genre here, and it was cool.
Batman and Robin, year one, number two from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Chris Samnee. In this issue, Batman and Robin are going against one of Batman's biggest enemies of all time, social services.
Oh.
Who will win? Who will take them down? I joke, but I was still very impressed by that take. Mark Waid continuing to find ways in the second issue of humanizing Batman and having him and Robin figure out their partnership together. Plus, as Pete shouted out, you have amazing Chris Samnee art throughout.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of start there, the Chris Samnee cover, sick, bro. Just fucking sick, dude. I love it. And yeah, you get a ton of great Chris Samnee art throughout the whole thing, which is great, not just the cover. But this is an intense ish, man. Robin's not behaving, you know. Bruce is not happy.
He's out of control.
You know,
you gotta shut this kid down.
Yeah, you know, people are getting upset. So yeah, this is an interesting kind of take. You know, I mean, you guys love being parents, so this has got to, you've got to feel very seen. You know,
you mean as your two? You're talking about you as your two dads?
No, yeah, yeah. I'm talking about the fact that you raise children and hopefully make them
raise you up. Right? You're talking about you.
Nope. I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about the children.
By the way, Pete, thank you for the saw you got me on Father's Day. It was really
yeah. And I also want to thank you for the saw you got me on Father's Day.
Oh, yeah. Great. That's fine.
Do you get two for one on the saws? I'm using a lot. I'm cutting different boards in half.
Oh, that's cool.
Anyways, 2x4s.
Yeah.
Play 2x4s in half.
You know, even, you know, Bruce Wayne struggles.
I started a band.
So it's nice to see.
Oh, he got you a hand saw? That's nice. See, we're two dads. Alex is playing a hand saw.
Talk about the actual comic here, though. So
this is important, Pete.
You know,
and here's a lesson, Pete. Don't interrupt.
So I just think that
you're
even
welcome,
if Batman struggles raising children,
I love you.
It gives hope for all of us. You know what I mean?
I love you, son. And the cat's in the cradle in the little boy Pete and the man in the moon, Alex.
I'm going to be coming home soon. I don't know. I don't know the lyrics to any
When
song.
You coming home, son, I don't know when. We'll read some comics then. I mean, Mark Waid, Chris Samnee, you got to read it. 100%. If you're a fan of Batman, the animated series, The Orig, this is the closest thing you can get right now.
The Orig.
Speaking on the recent cartoon as well, closest to that you can find in the real world. So definitely check this out.
In the real world.
Sorry. The real world, Alex.
Yeah, what can you find in the fantasy world? Just real quick.
Crazy cover. I don't like this
Your
cover.
Dreams.
Spider-Man Reign 2, number 5 from Marvel by Kara Andrews. In the final issue, there is a showdown as Peter Parker is back in the future with Miles Morales and the younger Black Cat that they've been tagging along with. And they're taking it to the ultimate villain that, of course, we've been facing down all along, the Kingpin. And a bunch of other things happen throughout the issue. And there's some twists and turns. Kara Andrews is a iconic artist who has done some amazing things.
Yes.
What do you guys think?
I agree. Oh,
that interesting. That was more of a statement than a prepared statement.
Okay. This cover is really fucked up. And a great example of some interesting things that Zelvatron was talking about. Yeah, I mean, this is better than Spider-Man Reign 1, I would say.
Oh, I'd hard disagree with that.
Well, I didn't get to have to look at anybody's junk, but this was super gross. That was
barely junk. It was a doodle of junk. That was a junk doodle.
What? Anyways, at least... What,
do you have doodle junk, Pete?
I thought it was
What's
sweet.
What's your favorite comic book of all time?
Venom... I thought it was sweet how Venom saved Peter Parker.
What is your favorite
Parker.
Comic book of all time?
I thought it was interesting that Venom saved Peter Parker in this, so I was happy with that choice, even though there was a lot of fucked up shit going on in this comic. So I can understand why you might not like it, Zelvatron, but I don't know. I just felt like the shock value of you showing cock and balls is not really a good storyline. But whatever. My favorite comic book of all time. You know the answer to this. Why do you ask?
I'm just saying, imagine your favorite comic book of all time, but there's one tiny little penis in it. Does that ruin the entire thing for you?
Good point.
I don't know.
Watch me.
Because we recently, not recently, it was a couple of years back, but we reread Spider-Man Reign, and I think all three of us were like, oh, that was better than I remembered, because the only thing I remembered was Spider Penis and him killing Mary Jane.
Yeah,
with
that's
his radioactive semen.
That would drove me
I still don't like those parts, but I do think there is a story, as we talked about when we revisited the first Reign, that does come through, even though it falls apart a little bit at the end of the series. This was a mess throughout.
Well, it's a bit of a messier story across the board. Like, there's just a lot of extra factors in it that don't really add up to what you want. I will say this issue I thought was the best of them and the most successful, because like it was a very clean, like
it ended
stuff's
well.
Bad, your villain is crushing literally, and then the way the story unfolds is I thought was good. Yeah. And I will say Kara Andrews' art is awesome. He's like a fucked up Todd McFarlane and is drawing like on par quality Spider-Man looks and poses, but there's just fucked up stuff happening all around. So I think that's worth the cover price.
There we go. Stand Still, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Lee Lowridge, art by Andrew Robinson. We are following a dude, or have been following a dude, who stole a device that lets him halt time. In this issue, we find out a little bit about why he has been doing what he's been doing. As a scientist, finally, after 4 issues, develops a device to try and stop him, though there's some quirks and hitches there. I know we've been a little back and forth about the series. How did you feel now that we finally do have the device and do have some answers halfway through?
Yeah, that's what I liked. We got some real answers in this issue. Some cool art, some real kind of panic moments for sure, too. But yeah, it was nice to, I felt like we're okay. I'm really kind of getting into the groove of this comic and understanding what's going on a little bit more. So I felt like it clicked a little bit better with me. I enjoyed this. You know, I mean, time travel shit always makes me roll my eyes a little bit, but I felt like this was kind of interesting and cool.
Yeah, I thought that this issue's all of the this comic I think is really beautifully made. The art is excellent, but this issue I finally am like, I see these characters. There are some characters in here that I can get on board with. We've mostly just been seeing a time traveler mess stuff up. And in this, we finally got a little bit of a look into something here. I'm curious, the way the plot has sort of twinned our heroes and villains together in an interesting way, that I'm unclear how that will spin out in the story, but it has me more interested in how it's going to happen.
Imbacado, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Thambo Ramatzi and Thabiso Mabana, art by Keletko Motong. This is a book that is coming from Charlize Theron's production company, which is trying to push forward South African artists and stories. So we're getting a little bit of a myth and extension there. I'll be perfectly honest, I am not 100% sure what's happening in this book, but page by page, I thought the art was nice, but also seemed a lot like cover art throughout versus individual pages. So I liked looking at it is the short version, but I'm not 100% clear on what was happening. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I felt like this was a cool comic. I really love the art. Interesting, kind of cool premise with the different tribes and the girl trying to find her way in the world. So, yeah, I felt like it had some kind of universal things to grab onto. But I can understand what you're saying. Like the artists looked like they were really kind of flexing and like wanted to do splash pages or wanted to kind of make things cool. But I almost felt like they had to like scrunch some things down. So it was... could fit it all in, which I don't know, maybe is a good problem to have. Like you have all these kind of cool ideas and want to draw big pictures. But yeah, I definitely didn't hate it. I thought this was interesting and cool. Yeah, I'd like to see more.
I agree. With you, Alex, I was a bit lost in this story wise. The art is very like lush and like using a color palette we don't see as much, just like really intense reds, and then sort of like neon blue and green underneath it. So it made for a very distinct looking comic. Story wise, I would definitely want, it's very dense. I think like I wanted it to slow down a little bit so we can sort of see what the characters are thinking and feeling.
Jenny Sparks, number four from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Jeff Spokes. In this issue, we're bumping between two timelines, one where Jenny Sparks is facing down Captain Atom in the bar where he's holding several hostages right after killing the Justice League in the previous issue, and in the other timeline takes place right around the time they killed Osama bin Laden.
Famously.
Yes. So for those of you who like to be like, hey, did you know that Tom King was in the CIA? I think if it wasn't clear in the last issue or the previous issues, it's very clear this issue that he is grappling with some of the role of that force and that military might and all the things that happened in the 21st century and how that conflicts with the 20th century. Again, as usual with his books, I know I'm a broken record here. I don't think it'll be 100% apparent until we hit the final issue, exactly what's happening. But yeah, that was my big thematic takeaway. The other thing that I'd throw out there is it's hard to get on board with this book, and I think purposefully so, because it's so unsettling to read.
Yeah. Unsettling what? How?
The plot. Like, he is very specifically, Jenny Sparks is kind of awful, and Captain Atom is demanding to be a god. There are people trapped in the middle who have basically given up. And again, I don't know necessarily if his point is like, here's how the US and UK acted post 9/11 in the 21st century, where the United States was like, well, I'm God now, call me God. And the UK was like, I guess we have to go along with this. I assume that's what he's getting at here, but it's uncomfortable to read. And again, I think he knows it's uncomfortable to read, but it just is.
My take is in that universe where it does feel like it's a commentary on 20th century thinking, Jenny Sparks being the literal epitome of that. And the 21st century world showing how much things have changed, the level of aggression and sort of quite literally take no prisoners that our modern world is, which is reflected in this story. But I like it. I think, yes, it is tense, and it's there's dread in it. I think the art is excellent. I think just the panel layouts are awesome. I like the characters. I like the jumping back and forth between the two timelines. There's a lot of like just panel by panel flashing between different types of imagery, which I think is cool. So I've been really enjoying this.
Wow. That's really different. I had the opposite. I did not like this at all. Just the smoking lady. I don't know what the fuck. And I'm not sure.
You must hate the 20th century. Which is where you're from. Where you're from.
Sure.
Why don't you go back there,
Put me down for hating it.
Wow. Hold on. I got to check my scorecard. Pete hates. I have so many centuries you hate, including the 20th now? Yeah. Holy shit. The only one you like is the one where the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles traveled back in time to.
The thing that I'll agree with you on is the art is great. I think the artist.
I was about to ask what the name of that movie is, but it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Back in Time, right?
Yep.
I believe it's Turtles in Time, isn't it?
Turtles in Time. There we go.
That's the game that I played and was very easy.
Storm, number two from Marvel, written by Murawe Udale, art by Lucas Wernack. In the previous issue, Storm got radiation poisoning, which I think we kind of know, but she finds out officially in this issue due to a mutant... not attack, but a mutant losing control of their powers in a nuclear power plant. And if you love ticking clocks, Justin.
Yeah, come on.
This one right ticks here. Fast.
It does. Ticks and hard. I'll tell you what, I love this issue. I thought this was better than the first one. The ticking clock does give you a little pressure of like. Too. Yeah. Stressful. I like this better than the first one, not in exclusion of the first one or anything. It's very tense. It's tough to see Storm in this position, but also at the same time, Lucas Wernack is drawing the shit out of this book. Oh my God.
Beautifully.
There's an action sequence at sea that is amazingly staged. And then there's just scenes of Storm going through her day that are great as well. But I'll also give a shout out to Murawe Udale, who introduces a new character here, a doctor that I thought was phenomenal. And I want to see a lot more of. I love this character. I thought it was great.
Wait. Any doctor that becomes X-Men adjacent is always like, fuck the X-Men. I don't even want a code name. I'm here, but I'm not involved.
You're not talking about the doctor that's revealed at the last panel. You're talking
No,
about
I'm
the,
talking about the doctor in the book. I don't remember his last name.
Okay. All right. I was going to say.
Dr. Zalbin.
Dr. Zalbin is probably
We're in the same profession.
You just
want
to tie in to your 100%. Comic book self. That's why you're like, ooh, a doctor.
Professional courtesy.
Yeah, sure. I think. Oh, go ahead, Justin. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go. Yeah, I feel like this is sad. I mean, but also so powerful and beautiful.
Because she's going to die in any minute now.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, if you guys had one day left, what are you going to do? I think it's an interesting kind of choice to play out here with Storm. So I thought it was very kind of cool to see what she would do with this.
If you had one day left, what would you do? Pete?
Jeez, you got to go get a plate. I mean, that's for sure. You know, I got to go visit the motherland, go back to the Ra-Cha-Cha, get myself one
How
last plate.
How long will it take you to get to Rochester from where you are right now?
Pete, you can eat garbage anywhere.
That's not, how dare you?
Raccoons
that's
do.
Not true.
Raccoons do.
It's not true.
I guess, on a similar topic, I'd probably like just eat some human flesh to see if it turned me into a Wendigo.
Oh, wow.
Like just
I would
it.
Go have Wolverine bleed in my mouth or something.
There you go. Smart.
Try to heal up a little bit.
Three peas in a pod, I got to say.
Yeah. Oh, shit. I'm dying today. I have a dentist appointment. Well, I better make sure my teeth are good. As I said, I just got to work out my gravestone, get it locked in ahead of time. As I said, I've called my last words for many years now. It's going to be, watch this. And then I do a trick of some sort and die. Just like Storm, in this trick, in this comic, which her trick is just being a good comic. Excellent stuff here. I agree with you. The art, I think, is really shining here with just following her. She go about her day that just so happens to be one of her last days, potentially. Love the reveal at the end of the book.
Yeah, me too.
Geiger, number 8 from Ghost Machine Geiger. Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Paul Pelletier. This is part of the unnamed universe from Ghost Machine, just to bring it back to what we were talking about Ghost earlier. Machine. And Geiger, the radioactive man, and his squire end up in a community that has managed to stave off the apocalypse. But as usual, we've read these books before. We've seen these movies and things. There's still something a little bit wrong with it that they find out by the end of the issue. And then things go even more wrong. I continue to say that I think this book has finally really hit its groove. Like, this is very Walking Dead, Last of Us, etc. in terms of, oh, founded a community, it goes bad. But I don't know. It works. And it gives a nice contrast with Geiger. Justin, you've been the Geiger denier for the most part, so I'm curious to hear what you
think. I'm the Geiger counter. I mean, is Geiger Jeff Johns' Spider-Man?
Oh. What do you mean by this?
When I was reading this, I was like, it feels like the pattern is Geiger shows up. He's like, this sucks. It's like a sour Spider-Man. He's like, this is bad. And then he like sort of fights a little bit. But I mean, Geiger just walks away from shit constantly. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel
that's
like his
survived.
So how is he Spider-Man?
Because just the pattern of action feels very, it feels like Jeff Johns is like, this character goes through these paces all the time. And so like, he is constantly like, man, my glowing ass is mad. And then he's like, I'm going to put away my rods and walk out of this situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Spider-Man. And the other way that he's Spider-Man, yep, is that he has a crazy rogues gallery of goofy looking fuckers trying to kill him.
Yeah,
like this. The rogues gallery in this issue.
I know we just started doing the show. Have you read any Spider-Man comic books? Are you familiar with the
Spider-Man?
Character?
Has a radiation situation. So does Geiger. Sure. It's the same thing.
Okay, that's literally the first thing you've said that's been similar to Spider-Man.
No, but the actual point I'm making is
Geiger's in a comic book, and so is Spider-Man. There you
Spider-Man.
Go.
Spider-Man is a pattern of action where it's like, I'm just trying to get by. I need to make money. I need to make all of my family happy. And I'm always late. Geiger has that same amount of details, and we just keep seeing him go through those paces over and over again.
I think it's
and
more like
the
a
Rogues
Western,
Gallery.
Though. It's more like a Western, though. It's more like the man with no name going from town to town and encountering the same thing over and over and being like, I can't help you. I just got a drink. Well, I'll help you
I think,
little bit.
I think that's true. The Rogues Gallery is what made me also think of Spider-Man because he has like a literal Sinister Six that is chasing him in this comic.
And I will say,
I think he is the flag in the ground character for the larger story.
100%. I get that. And to back up what you're saying a little bit, I don't know if you guys know this, but Sam Raimi, when he was originally casting Spider-Man before Tobey Maguire, he wanted Clint Eastwood. So it actually brings those ideas together really well.
I think we're all saying the same thing.
Yeah, 100%. Particularly Pete, who said nothing so far.
Yeah, he's like, I don't want to be a part of this.
It's weird. But I continue
That's
to
why
enjoy...
you're a black bolt, Pete. Your words have such power, so you save them.
Thank you. Yeah, I think Geiger for me continues to be very enjoyable. Love me a curmudgeon. Also, I'm a sucker for a two-headed dog. So, this hits a lot. For me.
Does it affect anything for you, Pete, that when he goes radioactive, you can see his body below his costume, which means you're probably looking at his penis in the book?
That's right.
Cool, man. Thanks for pointing that out.
And Pete, we should go shopping together because I'm looking for a dog with two assholes.
Titans number 17 from DC Comics, written by John Layman, art by Pete Woods. In this issue, the team is taking on Clock King, one of Justin's favorite villains.
What's up? The Clock King situation is out of control. I opened this book and I was like, how is this guy here too?
Wait, where else was he?
He was in such a big part of. He's been around. He's just around a lot lately, and now he has actual time shit. It's just like
he's like the Spider-Man
fact that he's
of
on
DC
a minimum.
Universe, I gotta say.
Thank you.
Yes.
All I see is Spider-Man.
He's been amped up with powers because of absolute power, so now he can kind of control time, and he wants to suck the Titans' brains or something like that. But I will say, I thought there was a neat bit of Bump It Up Donna Troy in this issue, which is necessary if she's going to lead the team. I was a little iffy on the first issue of this all-in run, but I was a little more sold here, personally.
Yeah, I think this is a fun issue. Titans versus the Clock King here. Fun twists and turns. Great art. Love the ending reveal. So, yeah, this is definitely enjoyable. I mean, I wasn't as pissed off as Justin to see the Clock King kind of sucking brains, which is a great way to get time back, by the way, in case you're ever wondering.
What is it? You love a countdown clock, but you don't like the Clock King.
I was just going to say, I love a ticking clock, but this guy unticks the clock. Oh. That's don't fuck with the clock, dude. Can't do that. He's clocking. It's funny you love the last page reveal. I feel like the character that's revealed on last page is like a placeholder for a more interesting villain right now in the DC universe. I'm like,
how dare you, dude?
Give me someone with something going on.
How dare you? How dare you say that, dude? He's one of my favorite villains.
Cool. What's interesting about him? He's got like some weapons.
Have you ever seen Teen Titans Go? Like, are you serious right now, bro?
Teen Titans Go?
He's got
a bunch of cool arcs in Teen Titans Go.
Are you thinking of Teen Titans Go or are you thinking of Teen Titans? Teen Titans Go,
the
is
kids
the one,
show?
Yeah, the yeah, one the where like, they dance and sing about waffles.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Are you thinking about the movie Teen Titans Go to the Movies?
I don't know. He's been in a bunch of stuff in Teen Titans, the animated series that I've watched. So that's what I was thinking of. But otherwise,
it's very funny that that's your favorite villain. Appearance of this character, because I think that reinforces my point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, whatever, dude. I think I'm very happy with this villain and well used, if you ask me.
The Moon is Following Us, number 3 from Image Comics by Daniel Warren Johnson and Riley Rosmo. We are following two parents who are desperately trying to save their child, who is not exactly in a coma. More like a mystical coma, I guess is the best way to describe it. And in order to do so, they have traveled inside of her mind and are trying to get her back. Shockingly, they get pretty close to their goal this issue, which I was not expecting to happen so early. But, of course, we get that with yet another classic Daniel Warren Johnson emotional gut punch waiting for us at the end of the issue.
Yeah, this was a lot. This was a lot. A lot kind of goes down in this issue. A lot of emotional stuff. You know, I liked how, you know, mom was getting on dad to be like, yo, where's your fucking head at, dude? It's time to fucking snap necks. Like, they got our kid. Like, we got to go save the fucking day. Yeah, this was very intense. Some crazy reveals to kind of stop you in your tracks. So, Daniel Warren Johnson likes to play with emotions, so I'm a little worried about what's to come, man, because that was definitely I was like, oh, shit. So, yeah, I'm a little nervous about what's happening.
Oh, do you think this is going to, like, emotionally heighten anymore? Or do you think it's just going to be sort of a chill hang?
No, it's definitely not going to be chill hang, bro.
Yeah.
Get your tissues out, man, because it's coming. It's coming, Mario!
Your whole thing is Murder Falcon that made you cry.
You sure did.
And this is going to do that. Like, how do you think? This is
so
about,
too cool to be forgotten. What were you trying to say, bro?
Yeah, you cry. Those are unrelated books. This is about parents trying to take care of their kid. Like Alex and I are with you. And like, if you ever got lost into your dreams or whatever, we would come for you the same way.
Don't come for me in my dreams, man. You don't want to be in that nightmare space.
Yeah, Alex and I invade your dreams, and we're immediately murdered. It's like, ha-ha, success. This is a very good book.
Daredevil number 15 from Marvel, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Luigi Zagaria. In this issue, Daredevil is grappling with the fact that his sins are run amok in New York City, or at least that's what we kind of assume is happening, and he assumes. A bunch of things happened in this issue. I continue to be a little flummoxed by this run as a whole. But the great news, and this is a bit of a spoiler, if you were ever wondering why Matt Murdock fucks so well, you're going to find out by reading this issue.
Yeah, I teased this earlier. I teased this earlier, bro. She's like, yo.
Spills the tea.
You got it, dog. You got that game. And honestly, Daredevil doesn't, nonplussed, no reaction. Mm-hmm. He's just like, good day. I have to go be sad somewhere else.
I felt like Zelbatron reading this issue. I was very misled by the cover. I was like, oh, we're going to get some really crazy Kingpin stuff. Kingpin's not even in this issue, just on the cover for some reason.
Yeah, it's some sort of honey. Do you think it's some sort of Winnie the Pooh situation?
I think so. Kingpin ate too much honey and now is stuck in the jar. Yeah. Yeah,
if you think Thick Wilson is in the Marvel Universe Winnie the Pooh, you haven't seen my big pitch for the future.
Dude, I can't wait for your take on this, by the way. I hope Marvel gives you a blank check and lets
number
you just go
one,
to town.
Honey is all I want. Honey is all I need. Number two, no pants on Kingpin ever again.
It's just Porky Pig in it?
Yeah, he's Porky Pig.
He would stop reading because then you'd see his little king penis.
Oh, it's boy. Not. It's nothing little about that king penis, okay? It's not Kingpin, it's King Peen, and that shit is going to rock you.
Yeah, I also...
Anyway, back to your review, Pete.
Yeah, actually, I agree with the Zalbatron. Daredevil has not been fun. Elektra is the best Daredevil, and this comic just keeps proving that point to me.
Well, here's the thing. Because I've been trying to diagnose why I have been struggling with this run, because I like Daredevil, I like some of the ideas in this run, but the fact that it's 15 issues in, it's the 15th issue of this story. So, like, it feels unending, and the way that Matt Murdock, his arc is just nonstop suffering. And I don't know what it is about Daredevil, but, like, he doesn't have to live this way. We don't have to have every Daredevil
whiner,
story.
Dude.
Yeah, but I agree it makes him not a fun character to root for because he's just constantly like, oh, no, it's all about guilt.
Yeah.
And I know that's a defining quality of Matt Murdock, but guilt, I think, only works if you see the other side of it a little bit and you get to see your character conquer it or be not guilty for a while. And that's why you're so good at making love. I was like, shouts to that. But it's so weirdly in there. Like, and I don't know. That whole thing, I was like, if that's a huge moment, that better be what the story is about. And it's just so hard not. The big reveal at the end is that he gets a letter from
what was happening.
And they don't even tell you what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. That was very weird.
Foggy suing him. That's what
do you
I
think
hope.
The guys who make like the Marvel Masterworks cards with the power ratings on the back are like, gotta add one for making love?
Yeah. Boner, he's plus +7 for boner. We haven't covered that in a lot of Marvel Masterworks.
Penance is a plus +10. That's crazy.
Yeah, hate boner.
Action Comics 1076 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid and Mariko Tamaki, art by Clayton Henry and Michael Sheffer and Megan Hetrick. And the front story, we're continuing the Phantom story with bad things going down to the Phantom Zone, though most of this is focused instead about what's going on with Superman trapped back in time on Krypton, with a little swerve over to Superboy and the Superman of China as they go on an adventure in space. Curious to see how this all ties together, if it does at all. And then in the backup story, we've got Supergirl dealing with a prisoner. You love this backup story, Pete.
I do love this backup story. I think the backup story is what makes this comic worth it right now. I'm just having such a blast with this. It's just artistically really impressive, but I feel like this is such a great use of Supergirl and such a cool story. I'm having a blast with this. Other stories are cool too. I mean, you know, I just feel like they are creatively doing something very cool with Supergirl.
I guess I will be a little bit sour on these. I really like both of these stories as well, but I think the Supergirl story has gotten so coy. I'm like, we gotta know what's going on here. Like, we haven't revealed anything. It's been
you gotta wait for it, bro.
We've been waiting a lot. This story has been a lot about waiting. And so Just want to get to something there. And the other one, like, this Superman story on Krypton is so good and so intense. When it cuts to the other two guys, I'm just like, guys, get out of here. Go. This, you're just screwed around. I'm like, go, put you in another issue. I'll read that issue later. But this story is hitting. And what I love especially about the front story is Superman is like, well, I can't create a time paradox. And I'm like, I've never seen a character in doing a time travel situation who would hate more than creating a time paradox. I believe him when he says it. Every other character, I'm like, you're lying. You want to create a time paradox. Superman, he doesn't.
Not very sour, I gotta say, but why don't we move on and talk about Null Hunter, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Michael Walsh, art by Gustavo Vargas. This is continuing a sci-fi take on the labor of Hercules, I believe. I still really should check that, but nice art, big action in this issue as we continue to delve further into this world.
Yeah, I agree. This is the art's really unbelievable. You know, we get kind of a day in the life of the Null Hunter here. Fun over the top action. They went red on the violent kind of scenes. It was an interesting artistic choice. Yeah, but this is cool.
Yeah, this is fun. It is a bit chaotic what's happening, but I think like an Olympus saga feels like it is pointing to what you're saying, the labors of Hercules. So I think I just need a moment with the characters a little bit before we just do like wild sci-fi cut up.
Vicarious, number 2 from Boom Studios, written by Ryan Parrott, art by Eleonora Carlini. This takes place in a world where there are things called proxies, which are people that you could pay to feel what they're feeling. So people use these different proxies in various ways. They go on, send them out on dates if they can't or don't feel comfortable themselves. There's sex, there's violence, etc. It's all about sensations, and it's mostly illegal. Well, following one proxy who has some big secrets in the background that are slowly getting unfurled over the course of the issues.
Now, Alex, you're a parrot head.
I am a parrot head. That is true. I grabbed a Marg, a Rogue Sung Marg, and booted up the old Vicarious. I really like this. I think this is smartly done. And I love being in the head of a character who we know is probably the bad guy. Like, he's bad, it seems to be every indication. So there's a lot more going on there than we know, and I think that makes an interesting window character onto the sci-fi world.
I feel like there's a lot going on in this issue. There's a moment in the back half where our guy ends up, we really get to ride along on one of his missions where he is living that, letting someone live out their situation, and he's the proxy. I thought that was awesome. I want to pare back a lot of the other stuff and really focus in on that, because that's super interesting. And then the noir-y stuff, sci-fi noir stuff that's happening around, just drip that in a little bit more rather than just putting it all on Front Street.
I don't know. I mean, this idea was fresher when it was Surrogates to me, and you know, and then they did the Bruce Willis movie off of that graphic novel and stuff. It's this kind of like, I can sit in the safety of my home and live through my kind of like proxy, my whatever, you know, kind of avatar for myself in the real world. But I don't know. I have a hard time believing that like it would be cool to have somebody else go to a restaurant, eat something, and I get to watch that, then actually, you know what I mean? I guess
but you feel it. Taste it. That's the whole idea, is that like in that specific instance, you're riding along while this dude eats everything in the restaurant. So you get to do that without gaining a single calorie and without feeling sick from eating all of that food.
Yeah, but he still goes and throws up in the bathroom.
Right, but he's not the guy the who person's hired, not the person is like, throw up. I want to feel
yeah, it's that. Like when I text you all those pictures of me eating at Long John Silver of all the fish sticks I ate, but I didn't show you what happened after.
Oh, man. Yeah, well.
What happened after was more fish sticks.
Yeah, I had another round.
I don't know, man. This is a weird, keep it coming. Weird future and creepy, and I don't know, man.
What was it's your proxy, future, Pete? Imagine this. I want to live
life. I want to live life. I don't want somebody else to live the life.
Imagine
that
this,
I want.
Though. You
I
can proxy any time of the day somebody in Rochester eating a garbage plate. So you can get that experience of eating a garbage plate.
But that's the thing. You're not
Rachacha.
Really
you are doing it. You're feeling it. You're feeling it.
No, I don't believe it. I don't believe the technology.
What a dream to taste
really
a garbage
feels...
plate, but not have to put it in your actual body. I mean, I can't.
I tell you what.
Better than that.
If I would love for someone to, you know, like if I could have somebody go down to Prince Street Pizza and give me a grandma slice because I miss that like crazy.
Grandma slice?
Yeah, because that's
there's a
that's
there's
when
a
you
theme
came.
Emerging.
Yeah, Pete loves grandmas in any capacity. Human
stop,
slice. Yeah, that's when you came to New York and visited as a tourist for a week, right?
I'll do it. Don't threaten me with a good time.
No, I'm saying that's why yeah, that's yeah. the only time you tried that pizza.
Yeah, what did you think you just... visiting New York, Pete? Did you like the city? Do you think it's some place you'd want to live sometime?
Yeah, if you only had the balls to move
that,
here.
Been there, done
you're
that.
You're not a New Yorker. No, you're not.
Coming for
you're
weekend
a Yorker.
Doesn't count as a
You're a Yorker. There. We're New Yorkers.
This is very inside baseball. Exceptional X-Men number 3 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Carmen Canero. After the last issue, the White Queen showed up and her plans are revealed. She wants to teach these three kids who have shown up at Kitty Pryde's doorstep. And so they both team up to kind of teach these kids together. I continue to love this series. I think the characterizations are great, particularly the kids. I was a little worried being like, here we go with another class of New Mutants, but they feel really distinct and really different and modern, and I like that quite a bit. And the dynamic between Kitty and Emma, as always, is excellent and a lot of fun to read.
Yeah, they're Kitty and Emma are the Professor X and Magneto of the new regime, I think, here. And we're seeing that played out pretty specifically. Kitty, less... of a believer as Charles Xavier from back in the day. But White Queen, perfect nemesis for her. They can throw punches, but also get along a little bit. I agree. I like the characters here. I think this is a fun book.
Yeah, this is not fun. You know, the title is very misleading. It says Exceptional X-Men. All they do is fight the whole fucking time. That's nothing exceptional about that. So, yeah, I just think that, like...
Sorry, are you talking in a mirror right now? I can't quite tell.
Yeah, you're looking at yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, the Ice Queen is not enjoyable in this issue.
White Queen.
And also not a good leader and shouldn't be put in charge of things. So, yeah, great art. Ice Queen sucks.
White Queen is her name. And also weird. Why do you hate this specifically so much? You just don't like White Queen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to see infighting. In books, it's not enjoyable.
It's every comic.
Let alone, I don't know, the past hour and 15 minutes of this podcast.
Yeah, it's every comic right. And our podcast.
Don't make it meta, dude. Don't make it weird.
Too late, man. House of Slaughter, number 27 from Boom Studios, written by Sam Johns, art by Letizia Catanici. This is a spinoff of Something is Killing the Children. And we're kind of focusing on, not exactly two trains here, but we're focusing on a bunch of stuff going on in the House of Slaughter with some various characters that we've been following all along. And this is much more mystical, I would say. I don't know if that's exactly the right word, than Something is Killing the Children. Some interesting stuff going on here. Mostly, though, I think I've said this before, but Letizia Catanici is such a great companion artist to Werther Dildera over in Something is Killing the Children. It just really feels of one piece.
Oh, yeah. Well said.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, this is just artistically impressive as shit. A lot of fun. Cool reveal at the end. Yeah, this continues to rock. You know, we're kind of getting people talking about different kind of philosophies and styles, kind of butting heads in this issue. And then, you know, I don't mean to spoil it, but the wrist eyeball, very crazy.
Yeah, I love an eyeball on my wrist.
Really?
What would that see? I do think I like this.
More? I mean, you can maybe look around corners if you reached your arm out a little bit. But
nice. I like this as well. I sort of want I feel like there are a lot of trains running, and I want there to be one main train and a couple of side trains. And it feels like we just have trains running all in different directions.
Yeah, that's how life works, man. You know, a lot of trains.
Just trains. Okay. Yeah.
Convert number 4 from Image Comics, written by John Arcudi, art by Savannah Finley. This is the final issue, I believe, of this title. Certainly seems like it. As our main character killed, I don't know, best way of explaining it is the god of the land of this alien planet last issue, and now he's dealing with the fallout of that. And one thing that I thought was very neat about this issue, beyond the art, which is very dreamlike, very, like, a little bit Mobius without the detailing. But I really like that part quite a bit. But I like the fact that they're playing off every part of the title, that it's convert, like he's converting to be part of this society, but he also converts things into other things. And he is a convert to a religion. And there's multiple things going on in the title that I thought were neatly played out, particularly through this final issue here.
I agree. I enjoyed this. It feels like it got really plot heavy, and then it sort of dispersed out in this into more of an art book. And that's not a knock. I actually really like that. But I did think we were going to get some larger plot hit at the end. But very cool. This was a fun read. And we've said this, but if you're a fan of Sovereign's Reign, Scavenger's Reign.
Yeah.
The animated show. Definitely read this book.
Yeah, the art is both gross and beautiful and very interesting. It's kind of trippy, but deep and amazing. So, yeah, this continues to be interesting and impressive artistically.
Where Monsters Lie, cul-de-sac number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Kyle Starks, art by Piotr Kowalski. This is the sequel series following a bunch of communities where serial killers straight out of the movies live. In our B plot, I guess it's our B plot, we're following a bunch of folks who escaped from the last series and end up in a cannibal community. But the main plot is following our maniac cop as he is being forced to go on a kill with some of the serial killers. You may not be surprised to learn that he turns the tables on them by the end. But I love this series. It's dark. It's gruesome. It's so funny. It's so well observed about horror tropes throughout. Great stuff.
Yeah, shouts to the cul-de-sac wordplay there. Really nice. But there's a lot of great jokes throughout this book and a lot of great just knives going into people. Mm-hmm. If you're a fan of that, you're going to love this book. But really fun, really gory. I really – this top of the stack, I think. For me.
Shout outs to Princess Stabby Pants. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Shout out to her. Moon Knight, Fist of Khonshu, number 2 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Alessandro Capuccio. There is a new drug on the streets, and it's literal fairy dust. Moon Knight is trying to shut it down, but there's some other forces that are trying to shut him down at the same time. That's all I got. Go on. Oh, what did you think?
Go off, yeah, Kings.
This is fun. You know, we got a lot of different Moon Knights here, which is a little weird. But, you know, 8-Ball's there, and he's a jokester. He's got some fun one-liners here. Interesting reveal at the end. I don't know, man. I like Moon Knight, and this seems insane, but I also am having a good time.
I agree. Like, I feel like the last run of this, also by Jed McKay, felt a little lost in the sauce, where it was like Moon Knight's dead and we're dealing with a lot of the other characters from the Midnight Mission. And this one feels like very activated. I like it. We have a bunch of Moon Knights and 8-Ball hanging out. He puts a car down with his pool cue. Shouts to that. I like the Tigra stuff that we're getting here. The villain reveal where like a dude or person in the gas mask opens their jacket and is like, oh no, the cubist. They make everything look like a cubist painting. I was like, I'm here. I'm here for it.
Yeah. Very Doom Patrol, that in particular.
Yes. The whole book feels that way in a good way.
Lawful number 5 from Boom Studios, written by Greg Pak, art by Diego Galindo. This takes place in a world where if you break a law, it shows up on you physically. We're following a character named Sung, who has been exiled from the city, even though he didn't really do anything wrong. And that's ultimately what he's discovering, is that society and doing the right thing and doing the wrong thing are much more complicated than he thought they were. There's some great character stuff here throughout. Really love Diego Galindo's art and his creature designs in particular. And I just love that Greg Pak is tackling something about society that we just don't talk about a whole lot, specifically how we interact with laws rather than the specific laws themselves. So very well done book.
Yeah, this Greg Pak guy is just one classy writer. I mean, in Pak we trust. This dude does not have misses. Yeah, this is cool. Like the meet cute here with the monster lady. But man, it takes a turn and I'm a little worried about her. But yeah, this is a blast. I love the levels to all the stuff that's happening in this book. Really appreciate what the Pak is putting down here.
Yeah, the underlying idea is really good. The art is really good. And you really feel the characters struggle with their place in this society. It's hard to tell, like, if the premise is what is happening. But there's so much like, is that real? Mm-hmm. Are you gaslighting me? And I feel that, especially right now.
The Department of Truth, number 27, from Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Allison Sampson. This is the second part of the story of Marilyn Monroe, a person who essentially is, what they don't call them cryptids, fictions? Is that what they call them in the... Whatever it is, she is somebody who basically warps reality around her based on the fact that everybody puts so much fiction upon her. And we're dealing with how that directly leads to her death in particular in this issue. Justin, I don't think you were here to talk about the last one.
Yeah, that's true. So, Justin, go ahead, man.
Yeah, go off,
go
King.
Go off, King.
Go off, King. Go off, Tom King. I think this is excellent. Like, I love the way that James Tynion is able to, he makes every issue feel like it was fully planned from the very beginning. This is 27 issues in, and this feels like an inevitable two-part story that we knew, that he knew at the beginning was coming, because the way it just slots in so seamlessly. And I love this. It's tragic. It fits in with a larger mythology. It feels like it's advancing the story strangely, coming off of the larger Kennedy assassination arc that we had before this. It's just so good. It's just so good.
Well, I'm glad somebody gets it and can follow along. I think artistically this is impressive as hell, but it's a lot to keep track of. I was like, oh, cool, Hunter S. Thompson. That was cool.
That was cool. Great Hunter. Yeah.
I really like this. I was a little, not iffy about the last issue, but it felt a little light to me in terms of the story. Having this as a companion to it and the flip side of what's going on with Marilyn, getting more into that, I think fleshed that out really nicely. And like Pete said, Allison Sampson's art is just great. You know, I miss Martin Simmons stuff, but the dreamlike nature of what Allison Sampson is drawing here is really nicely done. Speaking of dream life, Paranoid Gardens, number 5 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Gerard Way and Sean Simon, art by Chris Weston. We get some big answers here in this issue, or I think we got some big answers here. So if you don't want to know, turn away. But we basically get all the confirmation that Paranoid Gardens is purgatory, or some sort of afterlife, and our money monkeys, who are trying to destroy it and take it over, are in fact hell, at a corporate hell that looks a lot like Disney World. this blows out the concept of the book in a big way throughout here.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm really enjoying this quite a bit. It's so weird. Chris Weston's characters are disturbing to look at, but that whole idea of corporate culture and IP versus artistic freedom is obviously very palpable, and I thought very well done.
I really liked the way that this came together, because I was pretty lost conceptually. It could have been a lot of different things. And now that it feels like it's all what's happening in someone's mind at the probable end of their lives, it seems like, feels like it really narrowed in on something.
Yeah, I didn't get that's that
what
at all.
That's my take. That's my take.
Oh, that's
we have two different takes.
Yeah. I don't know what's happening, but artistically, I'm alive around for the ride.
Artistically, I'm alive.
Artistically, I'm alive.
Not tactically or scientifically, but artistically.
Yeah.
That's when I feel the most alive. I think this is very cool and very interesting. So I'm along for the ride. I can't wait to see how this unfolds more, because I need some more answers. But I feel like
a few more answers, not a lot. One more issue. Yeah. Right?
I feel like when just before Zelbatron gets on Tumblr, he puts on one of these monkey masks, and that's how he speaks with his crew there.
Wow, Tumblr call out.
I'm not going to say it's not true. Sentinels number 2 from Marvel, written by Alex Pakdendahl, art by Justin Mason. We've got a crew of mutant hunters in this issue. They're going after Sebastian Shaw. Meanwhile, there's a bunch of other things that are going on in the background. Political machinations involving not Bolivar Trask, but whoever his son is who's leading the team, as well as the head of the new Xavier Prison, Westchester, I don't remember.
Gray Malkin
Prison. There you go. Thank you. I like this better than the first issue. I thought it came out pretty strong in the first issue, but there was obviously a lot of setup of the characters. Now that we have that out of the way, they could explore their relationships more, which I think played out very nicely here.
Yes, so many of these X-Men books have a hard-edged tone to them. Maybe a sign of the times, a sign of the state of the X-Men, I guess. But this one, maybe the most. But I welcome it. It feels very timely. And I like the characters. I think it's very militaristic. I'm curious what Pete thinks about that as a military guy, sort of. G.I. Joe. Punisher. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the 90s. This art style really brings me back to that kind of like 90s comic book feel a little bit. But other than the art, I don't know. There's some cool moments. Some things were okay, but it also, I don't know. I kept being pulled out of the story a little bit. So I don't know. It's all right.
Interesting. Star Trek number 26 from IDW, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Angel Hernandez. The crew of the Theseus is escaping from a reality-destroying wave caused by Lore, the evil brother of Data, and they have escaped to another universe. You thought at the end of the last issue, or I thought, it was just back in time, and they're like, oh, they encounter the Enterprise. Turns out, wrong Enterprise is actually the Chris Pine 2009 crew.
Pine time
that they interact with. I don't know. I'm a mark for this.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I'm a sucker for this. I'm here for this.
Yeah.
And I continue to love, I've said this from the beginning of this Star Trek relaunch, the way that they're just like, you know what? Let's just put all the best characters into different ships, and they will often encounter each other. And we get that again here. The only thing is, this is about, like, we have to face this annihilation wave. And they get all the ships. They get, like, every ship from the Starfleet in this universe. And they're like, all right, let's fight it. Oh, no, it's a wave.
Yes.
It's a wave that's killing us all. I was like, what the fuck was the plan?
I don't know. The plan doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, it's very cool, mind you, up until then. These crews interacting, all the jokes they make about, like, you have a very shiny ship. How does that work? What do you want? Carpet on it. Great.
Throughout. Very fun. Yes.
Having a great time. But I totally agree with you. sorry, I was just going to say, like, the shot of the entire fleet going to stop this wave, very cool, really sick. Very but to cool. your point, they have no plan beyond that. They're like, okay, waves coming. And, oh, there's a wave.
I needed a very basic nonsense science, like, we'll just set our deflector dishes to whatever and shoot something. And they
the dilithium all at the same time. Oh, no, it didn't work.
Any version of that. I would have loved any version of that. And we're like, oh, no, it's too strong. Scotty, it's testing off the charts, Captain, or whatever. Anything. Instead, we just get like, here we are. Oh, everyone died except for us. We're in an even worse place.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that's being said here. You agree
because
fun.
You're a Star Trek fan.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm
more a Trekker.
Pine guy myself, so you know, more of the movies. But yeah, this is a fun mix of the characters that you know are what made this famous. So it's kind of a cool nostalgia wave of different time periods. So
the nostalgia wave, reverse
the dilithium. Power Fantasy number 4 from Image Comics, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Casper Wingard. In this issue, everybody, all the superpowers are converging for the first time in this book, at least, or most of them, on a art exhibit that is being held by Masumi, I believe is the name of the character.
Yep.
And you don't want to upset Masumi or bad things are going to happen to the entire world. So everybody is tiptoeing around her most of the time. This is an issue that we talked to Kieran Gillen and Casper Wingard about back in New York Comic Con. So you can listen to that interview. Great issue, as always. Justin, I know you were pretty hyped about this, so take it away.
Huge fan. The way that this comic just portrays superpowers in a more realistic, real-world way is really smartly done. It refreshes, I think, my sense of superheroes in the world. And this issue did just a great job of that, exploring the nature of creativity and how power upsets the dynamic of getting people to respond honestly to you is a major part of this book or this issue. And these characters are all super interesting, and we keep switching between them. And that just shows how powerful all of them are, that they're able to do that without missing a step.
Yeah, I really agree with everything Justin said there. This is creatively impressive as shit. Artistically, it's also quite beautiful and impressive. But I also just want to give a shout out to the rage the artist has and say that was nice.
There we go. Last book to talk about, Seance in the Asylum, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Clay McLeod Chapman, art by Leonardo Marcello Grassi. In the first issue, we had a medium come to an asylum, hold the seance there, as part of a plan.
Horrible idea.
Horrible idea as a part of a plan to horrible try plan. And cure the patients through spirits. Goes horribly wrong, and it turns out that the head of the asylum had a very different plan for how this was going to go. I really like this issue. I think they slow played it maybe a little too much on the first issue, but now we're into some weird, upsetting ghost stuff going on as more and more people are getting possessed. I like it.
This is creepy as shit and very upsetting. I don't like it.
It's healthcare, man. It's healthcare with ghosts, you know?
That's exactly right. A seance is necessary.
Real life healthcare is already scary enough, you know what I mean?
I don't want to get too political on this podcast, but highly recommend you get all of your ghosts to possess you before January. That's all I'm going to say.
Wow.
Whatever, Captain Woke.
Capitan. Wow. Capitan Woke.
Capitan. I just want to shout out that the first line of this comic is about patient Carlton Walters, born in Pulaski, New York. That's my region. Shouts to Pulaski. That's where we keep our garbage in the garbage and our plates in our cabinet. And it is a fun area. The rest of this book, little confusing, like the ghosts when they talk.
And... That is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Anyway, just to follow up, Pete, I need a dog with two buttholes because the puppy I have, one's not enough.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.